From Ticker Tape, this is Where's My Money? It seems like almost every day we're told by some famous investor that diversification for your portfolio is important. And every day we take in that message and continue to follow that advice. But rarely do we hear why diversification is so important for the growth of our money. Rarely are we walked through specific examples of the exact risks that an undiversified portfolio has. And it's your lucky day, because all of that changes in today's episode of the Where's My Money podcast. To understand the perfect levels of diversification for all age groups, and to understand the risks that come with a lack of diversification, we spoke to Jayanth Pai, who works for PPFAS Mutual Fund. And to begin the conversation, we went all the way back to the very basics by defining what an asset truly is.
An asset basically is something that you either earn something out of or which helps your wealth to grow. So it should meet at least one of these two characteristics. So for instance, if you buy a farm, so that farm, you grow something. So the farm value, the land value may not grow immediately, but you are able to extract something out of it every year. So that is an asset. Similarly, if you buy equity shares, there may be times when the price may not increase, but if the company is a good one, you earn some dividends out of it every year. So that is one characteristic of an asset. So it should help. It should be something that you can earn out of. The second characteristic is the asset is something which grows in value. So for instance, if you buy a bar of gold and you keep it in your safe deposit vault, you may not earn anything out of it for several years. But one of the characteristics or features of gold is that it generally keeps pace with inflation. So the price of gold may keep rising in line with inflation. Sometimes it exceeds it also.
That makes complete sense, Jayanth. And what I want to ask you next is the follow-on question of the types of assets of which investors can actually invest into and what make up someone's portfolio.
So these are known as investable assets. So different type of investors can choose to invest in these. Every asset need not meet the requirements of every investor. So an investor has to know what is best for himself or herself, and then choose the assets. So the kind of investable assets, you could divide it into, say, two things, physical and financial. So physical asset is something which you could use, you could invest either for your own use or it's something tangible. So for instance, an apartment or land, these are tangible assets. Now you could put that asset to use, say by living in it or by renting it out, or by using it to earn income in some form. The second is financial asset, assets which you can't touch or feel, but which are there. So for instance, equity shares in your DMAT account or your bank fixed deposit. And when you're investing, you could invest either as a lender or an owner. So if you place a fixed deposit with a bank, you are actually lending money to the bank. So you're a lender. But if you purchase equity shares, you are the owner of that company. So this is another distinction, lending versus ownership. There are also some assets which are termed as assets, but where a question mark still hangs over them. So for instance, crypto. So fans of crypto are adamant that it is an asset, while those who are against it say it is only a means of speculation. So similarly, there are other gray areas, say for instance, collectibles or art. They're treated as alternative assets. Alternative assets are those which are difficult to fit into traditional categories, but which have some value of their own. Of course, over time, there are a lot of things which just through sheer force of acceptance, they become mainstream. So for instance, art today is no longer treated as something which is quaint. It has become mainstream, but NFTs are still quaint.
So you have all of these options available to you and a scarce amount of money towards which you have to allocate towards these assets. And that's where this idea of diversification comes in. How much do you allocate to each particular asset to yield the most returns for your portfolio? Could you talk about why diversification as a subject in the personal finance and investing world is super important? And could you talk about a few examples of why or why not folks should be considering diversification within their portfolios?
Diversification basically means having different things in your bag. So for instance, if you say go to a retail outlet, you won't stock your shopping cart with the same stuff. You will have a certain set of requirements before you step into that supermarket or something. So you will not stock your shopping cart with 10 different watches or 10 different phones. You'll do a bit of thinking beforehand and then hone in on, say, one phone, one pair of shoes, one watch, and maybe some food items, whatever. So if you have 100 rupees to spend, you would like to spend that 100 rupees on things that give you the most happiness. So, and every product or every service will give you happiness to some extent, but too much of it will not give you that extra happiness. So the same thing, like what applies to spending, also applies to investing also. So just as I mentioned, there are different asset classes. Each of these asset classes have their own set of characteristics. So I call it the tripod. A tripod has three legs. So every asset should be gauged against these three legs. So one is safety of capital. The second is liquidity. How soon can you convert that asset into cash if you require it? How soon and at how at minimal cost? And the third is post-tax and post-inflation returns. It's not the headline return alone which matters, because taxation will eat away into some of that return. And the asset should at least keep pace with inflation. So those assets are worth considering. At the same time, I understand it's difficult to forecast everything. So we have to go a bit by what has happened in the past and make our choices. So there's also a statistical term called correlation. Correlation refers to the extent to which how all these assets move together or don't move together. So for instance, a bank fixed deposit in a good bank, say State Bank of India or something, the chance of losing money is zero. I mean, as good as zero. So safety of capital is very high. But if that fixed deposit gives you only 2% return per year, it fails the third leg. That is, it doesn't give you enough post-tax, post-inflation returns. But safety of capital, 100%. Then we come to, say, a small cap stock. So there, the small cap stock may give you, the chances of earning are high. I mean, if you do adequate research. But it may fail a little on the liquidity front. Because tomorrow, if there's a run on the market, small cap stocks may not find enough number of buyers, even if it's a good company. While the blue chip stocks, you will easily be able to sell and convert to cash. So the third thing of returns, it is very likely that small cap stocks could give you outsized returns. So it could check that box, but it could fail on the second one of liquidity. But if you combine a small cap stock with an SBI bank fixed deposit and you keep 50-50 in each, so tomorrow if there is a crash in the market, you will be losing heavily on only 50% of your portfolio. Your other one is safe. And the other one is also very liquid, because you may have to pay some small penalty to convert to cash. But net-net, you are good. So you don't have to scrounge around for money, you know, if required. Because a small cap stock may take another 5 years to come back. So net-net, you could still make money in the small cap stock, but you don't know when. And so that is the trade-off. So diversification is all about trade-offs. There is no holy grail as such. So because you and I will have different diversification needs and also ways to fulfill them.
So you mentioned there's so many trade-offs. So how does a lay investor who has a full-time job, probably doing something else, doesn't have so much time to think about all of this and this entire equation, how do they go about thinking about this tripod that you've laid out? And how do they go about thinking about all of these trade-offs in their own asset allocation?
So objectives are very important. So objectives are the fountainhead from which everything stems. So objectives can be divided into three buckets based on duration. So your short term, medium term and long term. So short term is usually things which rectify within the next 1 or 2 years. Medium term is say between 2 and 5 years, and 5 years and beyond. So these are thumb rules, but it's better than nothing. So every objective will have a set of assets which could help you achieve them. But if you choose the wrong asset to meet the wrong objective, then you will be disappointed. So there is no good or bad asset as such. It doesn't have any human characteristic. So they have nothing against you. They are just doing what they are doing. But it's up to us to choose the, it may not be the best one always, but it should be broadly appropriate to meet that goal. So again, the safety, liquidity and return thing comes here also. If our objectives are very near term, our main focus should be on safety. Because we should not get into that trap wherein we invest something with greed in our mind, you know, that something will give us an outsized return when the time period to achieve that return is very, very less. So for instance, suppose you had a 3-year objective. So in something in 2019, you told your planner that you desire to buy some a Tesla, say in 3 years. And so you know, Model 3S had a lot of backlog in bookings. So even if you booked in 19, your backlog would be said that you would be getting delivery in 3 years. So based on that, suppose you paid an advance of 10% for a Tesla and you still had to pay 90% for the rest on delivery. So your planner told you, okay, you have 3 years. So you choose your asset, and but you felt that, okay, Russian things were all great. Your planner told you that, okay, they might be great, but it's risky to be, you know, in highly correlated assets. But suppose you ignored the planner and you went completely overweight on Russia. So up till, say, maybe a month before the war, you would have been thinking that your planner is a fool, you know, who told you to diversify because you were the one who was winning big. But unfortunately, a month before the delivery time, the war broke out and everything went down. So now you are really stuck because even though you had a lot of paper profits, when you really need to withdraw that money, you are not having enough. So this shows that one is the benefit of diversification.
So thank you for that explanation. And I'm going to ask you probably an oversimplified question, but let me know if you can actually take on this question. Let's say, for example, you are speaking to three separate investors. One investor who's looking at a near-term investment, they might be older and they need funds immediately available with them, and they need to keep pace with inflation and they can't risk losing too much. Then there's another investor that's a little bit more medium term. Maybe they're in their 40s and they have a long-term horizon, but not super long-term. And then you have a third investor who's probably in, you know, his or her early 20s and has a long time horizon in front of them. For each one of these investors, how would you recommend they allocate their portfolio between highly risky, not risky at all, and kind of a medium risk asset allocation within their portfolio? How would you go about advising them on that?
Yeah. So the first category, which is the senior investor, for them, of course, I'm assuming that they don't have pots of money stashed away. I mean, I'm assuming that they need liquidity. So for such people, investing in liquid assets is very important. So by liquid, I don't mean just keeping it under the mattress. So, or even just letting it rot in a savings account. Although, yes, you should have an outsized percentage in your savings account compared to the person in their 20s. But in general, I would say the proportion of less risky to zero risk assets should be over 80% for a senior investor. The other 20 can be invested in things which could give them some capital appreciation, say an equity mutual fund.
And for the medium term and short term investors?
So the issue with this particular category is that they are always grappling with several responsibilities. So it's not just about their own retirement or their own medical insurance or something, they are often the sandwich generation. So they are the ones who have to look after their parents also and their kids also, in addition to themselves. So they have to really compartmentalize their investments into things that suit all three. So the people in this category would choose a percentage of, say, 65% in equity and equity-related instruments, which includes mutual funds or PMS or whatever. I would not suggest too much of direct stocks, because today, although it's very easy to execute, the research has become equally difficult because of an excess of information. So how do you process all that? Do you have the time, the ability, all that? So to avoid that, I think just two or three good mutual funds or PMS or anything which gives you decent equity exposure. So those things are good options. For the debt segment, I think again, don't get too adventurous. Stick to, say, short duration funds, or today in a rising rate regime, you could find some good, even simple bank FDs. Not now, not immediately, but over the next 3 to 6 months, I really think that we will be seeing some juicier rates. If you are willing to trade off a percent or two of return for simplicity, I feel that's worth it. So keep it simple, and don't worry if somebody else is richer than you or makes more money. You have to look at yourself. If you have met your goals, all the other things are immaterial. So that's a, if you come with that feeling, you will be happy overall, I feel, rather than, you know, all the time thinking about these things. I don't think too much about these things, basically.
I think that's awesome advice. And I completely agree with you that it's something that you shouldn't overthink or overstress about. And I think just to end with the last category of a young person, if you could just highlight how risky their portfolio can be at a high level, and yeah, essentially explore the risks that they can take and that they should take, and then the optimal level of diversification there.
For youngsters, not taking a risk is the biggest risk. Because if you play it very safe, you tend to miss out on a large part of the upside. And this has been happening historically. So it's not just in my generation or your generation. Over dozens of generations, that's what's been happening. So for instance, if you've just begun earning, I would say that you don't have debt on your head. Say student loans and all. If you don't have that, and if you don't have the burden of looking after your parents or something, I mean, if your parents are self-sufficient or independent, then you have to put 100% of your money in equities only, of your savings. So whatever you save, and I suggest that you save at least, say, 20% to begin with. And as you earn more, you should actually save more, which is difficult because in most of our cases, we have seen that as we earn more, we tend to spend more. But at least keep it at the back of your mind. So 20% to begin with. And it should go all into equity funds only. Equities, equity funds. And there is really no need to play safe in that way. If you do want to play safe, you could add a little bit of a thing like a public provident fund or something, where you invest a small amount in a disciplined way for 15 years. So that will be your debt part. Also, if you're there in a good company, you will have your employee provident fund. So the savings that you're doing, you could have spent it today and enjoyed. But instead of that, you are willing to trade that immediate pleasure for the hope of a better tomorrow. So if that thing is ingrained into young people's minds, and maybe they should see some small wins or along the way. Because if they see that, like for example, if they see every year their thing is growing by so much, so those things will also help. Because people need to see some affirmation for whatever they are doing.
I think that is a perfect place for us to wrap up, Jayant. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Arman. I'm happy I got an outlet for all this.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Where's My Money by Tickertape. On this show, we simplify the finance landscape in India for you. So if you're looking to venture into stock investing, sort out your personal finance, or make sense of how economic developments can impact your money, this podcast will be a perfect addition to your morning commute or household chores. Also, if you enjoyed the episode and want more of this, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform to never miss an episode. And last but not least, consider downloading the Tickertape app. It is an investment analysis platform for stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, and much more. The link and further description will be in the show notes below. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we will see you in the next one.